How is the drive coming in? It'll be splendid going out. I'm going to preach till the plows show up. You may have heard it, the announcement that in a couple of weeks, so 2 weeks from today, Lent is starting soon. You know that. That's the 40 days looking toward Easter, which is a good time of reflection and a time of fasting even. By the way, I brought this book up just because it's a really good book. Scott McKnight is a New Testament professor from Chicago. He wrote a book called Fasting. You might look it up. It's a really good book. One of the things that I want to encourage us, 2 weeks from today, which is the Sunday before Ash Wednesday, we're calling it Fat Sunday. Have you heard that? Not Fat Tuesday. It's not Mardi Gras. And we thought Dimanche Gras sounded kind of weird. So we're calling it Fat Sunday, where you'll come, families and all, Sunday afternoon. I think it's 5 to 7. Is that what it is? 5 to 7. Tons of food. It's going to be the old-fashioned Mardi Gras, where we're going to pig out to get ready for Ash Wednesday. Then you come back on Wednesday, where we do ashes and we sort of prepare ourselves for the Lenten season, and including fasting and reading, and we'll have all kinds of suggestions for you then. But I just wanted you to realize that it's launching on Fat Sunday, which is 2 weeks from today. So that's kids and everybody, show up. Okay. I'm going to be in Ephesians chapter 6 today, verses 1 through 4. And as we start, I want you to hear the text. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, so that it might be well with you and you may live long on the earth. Fathers, parents, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That is the word of the Lord. So we're now sort of back into Ephesians, the household codes, which have to do with marriage and then parenting. And then in the text, it's slaves and masters. We're going to apply it next week even to the workforce. And it's called the household code because it means what we believe, our following of Christ, needs to be applied to the very households that we live. We took a bunch of weeks to look at marriage, and today we're going to look at, in many ways, where the rubber meets the road most deliberately, maybe, than any other place, and that's in your house. Parents and children and grandchildren. I mean, all of that. Think about that. That can be the greatest experience ever, or it can be the worst experience ever. You can be so, when you think about your parents or your children, or you can be so proud, or you can say, I don't even know who those people are. How does the rubber meet the road so that our Christianity makes sense in our homes, as parents, as grandparents, as children? This is far from the last several sermons were PG-13. This is not at all. This, I'm hoping the kids that are here will listen. This is talking to them as well. We're gonna talk with these four verses. What does the Christian faith have to say about me as a parent, about me as a grandparent, about me and some of you, all of us, as children of other parents as well? As we begin, hey, let's do this. You know this text, I bet. It's not too small, right? I want you to read that with me. That's Psalm 127, and it's a beautiful psalm about the home. So let's read it together. Unless the Lord builds a house, the work of the builders is wasted. Unless the Lord protects a city, guarding it with sentries will do no good. It is useless for you to work so hard from early morning until late at night, anxiously working for food to eat, for God gives rest to his loved ones. Children are a gift from the Lord. They are a reward from him. Children born to a young man are like arrows in a warrior's hands. How joyful is the man whose quiver is full of them. He will not be put to shame when he confronts his accusers at the city gates. That too is the word of the Lord. So let's talk a little bit about kids and parents this morning. What were your parents' names? Think. What did you learn from them? What are some lasting memories you have of your parents? Good ones? Indifferent ones? What are things that your parents gave you that you decided, I need to pass this on? Or maybe I'll pass this one up. What did your parents teach you? An old family friend sent me this not too long ago to share with my mom. Right there. That's my mom, my dad, my older sister, my older brother, and that's me with the bowl haircut. My older brother and I used to love to just give my sister all the hard time in the world. We knew how to get her crying. It was really good. When she turned 13, she was so proud that she was a teenager. We came into her room and we said, we just heard that we're kids and we made up this stuff. The president just came up with a decree that you're not a teenager when you're 13 anymore. It's not till you're 14. And so she started crying and told on us. My parents came over from Italy. My sister actually was born in Italy. We lived there when I was a kid up until almost age 5. My parents gave me, when I think about what they teach me, they gave me a sense of pride in my Italian heritage. My dad especially, I think he gave me a work ethic that I still have to this day. You sort of want your surgeon to have a good work ethic. And they gave me, my sister was a painter. Shows all over the world. My brother was a published art poet. They gave us a love for the arts that I still have to this day. What are your kids' names? Go there. Yeah, let's go back. What are your kids' names? What are they getting from you if you're a parent? And see if there's any children. What are you getting from your parents? When I just came back from Cincinnati, we were there for a couple of days. That's where our daughter lives. My daughter clearly got tennis from her dad. She's a tennis monster, actually. She plays all the time now. She beat her dad on his birthday on Friday. At first, I was beating her bad. I mean, I was up 5-1 in the first set. And then I just choked like nobody's business. And then the thought came to my head, was she letting me win because it's my birthday? And then all of a sudden she decided to turn it on? Sue and I think, both gave this to her. She works really hard. She's always working. She has a love for fabric and a love for fashions. What are you imparting to your kids? You realize the way we were spoken to as children, or the way we speak to our children, becomes a significant part of the inner voice. You'll be hearing that voice for the rest of your life. the values that we were imparted to by our parents or that we are imparting to our children become a very fabric of their hearts. They will be dealing with that. We are, for the rest of our lives, whatever those values are. So, why does a guy who lives in Scottsdale, Arizona, who never comes to Northeast Ohio, was born in Arizona, and certainly when the weather's like today, he doesn't come to Northeast Ohio. Why does he go to Goodyear Park to go watch the Cleveland baseball team? Because his father gave him a love for Cleveland Indians baseball when he was a little boy. He'd never even been to Cleveland, but it's still part of his character. It's who he is. So let's talk about kids and parents today from Ephesians chapter 6. I'm going to skip through these and go right to that. Ephesians 6. Plato, you know the name Plato, Greek philosopher. No person should bring children into the world who was unwilling to persevere to the end in their nurture and education. No person should bring children into the world who is unwilling to persevere to the end in their nurture and education. Parenting is a long job. Now, parenting is preparing them to go out on their own, become independent, right? And yet, you're never really done parenting. Now, I'm not talking, this isn't helicopter dad or boomerang parent or whatever. You're just never done parenting. You continue parenting even in all of the other seasons of life. So we're going to talk about those seasons of life and the difficult, wonderful arenas that tries our faith and our mettle, I think, unlike anything else. Rubber meets the road. Is your faith real? Let me ask your kids, and they'll tell me. First, as the passage begins, it begins with the children. And there it is in front of me. Children, obey your parents in the Lord. That's right. Honor your father and mother. First commandment with a promise so that it may go well with you and you may have a long life in the land. Kids, honor and obey your folks. That's the first point. Two verbs in those verses, honor, obey, which I would tell children, notice the command isn't that you have to honor and obey. The command is not that you have to hang out with them when it's not fun to hang out. Remember when your kids, I remember when Sarah was, how old, 12 or 13, and it just wasn't cool to be with your parents. And like we'd go to the mall or something, and she just didn't want to walk with us. So she'd be like three steps over here, and we'd be there. And it was like, everyone knows you're with us. You're not just a 12-year-old walking by yourself, but oh well. But it doesn't say you have to hang out with them sometimes. But it does say you have to obey. And you have to honor. Obey because it is right. It's an interesting phrase, isn't it? That's why I quoted you Plato. And I can quote you, let me quote you one other Greek fellow. This is 5th century BC. A drama writer, Aeschylus, has written a number of things. He says, reverence for parents stands written among the three laws most revered for righteousness, for what's right. Reverence for parents. Why? It's common sense. Obey your parents because it's right. Every society knows it. It's just right. If you want order in the culture, the order has to begin in the home. Obey your parents because it's right. Right? Which, by the way, parents that are smart don't have all the laws. If I don't know piano, I'm going to send my child to a piano teacher, right? If I'm not a good tennis coach, I'm going to send my child to the best tennis coach. I share that with others, but I'm still ultimately responsible. I am. You are as parents. Kids, they are. They hold an account before God for you. Which, by the way, historically, from Greece all the way to today, throw Nazi Germany in there, totalitarian regimes will always have odds between the authority of the state and the authority of the home. So that friends of our family, he grew up in Germany, he was in the Hitler Youth. He died recently. Really? Why were you doing that? What did my parents had no say in that? Oh. Totalitarian states want to take away the authority of the parents. We will tell you what's right. Kids, obey your parents, for it is right. It is right. Honor your parents. If obey your parents is action, do what they say, honor is more of just a reflection of their value. Honor your parents. Show high regard to them. So don't just follow orders. I mean, we're growing. We want you to grow out of that. But there needs to be a sense of value. Just a study for today, I sort of reminded myself of the book of Proverbs. In one way, the book of Proverbs can be read as parents' instructions for children, for a son, a king to his son that he might rule, but parents to their children that they might live well and wisely. And so you read over and over again things like, "Hear, my child, your father's instructions. Don't reject your mother's teaching, for they are a fair garland for your head and pendants for your neck. My child, if sinners entice you, don't consent. My child, if you accept my words and treasure up my commandments within you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, if indeed you cry out and you seek wisdom like silver and you understanding of the Lord, you will gain wisdom. My child, don't forget my teachings, but let your heart keep my commandments, for length of days and years of life will be abundant for you. My child, don't despise the Lord's discipline." Again and again, "Listen, children, to a father's instruction and be attentive that you may gain insight. Hear, my child, and accept words that you might have the years of your life, and that they might be many." Obey. Honor. That's the instruction of children. Obey and honor. So I've got three things. I just wanted to think through those things a little bit, and then we're going to get to the responsibility of parents. What does it mean to obey and honor your folks? I came up with the phrase, carry your name, or carry the name. Proverbs will also say a good name is more desirable than all the riches. A good name. Parents give you clothes on your back, guitars, tennis rackets, cars. Parents give your name, your last name. Honor it. Respect it. Make it proud. You'll never outgrow that, by the way, adults. That name that you still have, honor it. Respect it. My dad and my sister were always at odds. It was just their personalities. My dad was the hard-driving type A surgeon, and my sister was the flighty type Z, or whatever. Artist, she was. And yet, I still remember, particularly one time, my sister did an art show in Madrid, Spain. And I remember my dad showing me, there were pictures of them when they were in Madrid, but he even showed me sort of like the program of it. He was so proud of her, and there was her name. Susan Sartorelli was her name. So proud of her, his name, there is an art show. That's, yeah, carry the name. On the other hand, a friend of mine blew out his knee. We were in college, went and had knee surgery at Trumbull Memorial Hospital in Warren, Ohio. My dad was the chief of surgery there. So it was around 11 o'clock at night. I was going to go see John in his hospital room. I stopped and picked up Sunrise Pizza for the two of us to eat in his hospital room. I knew all the ins and outs of the hospital because my dad used to take me there when I was a kid. So I knew how to go up the fire escape up to the sixth floor, out down the back hallway, and sort of skip Nurse Ratched so she doesn't see me, and show up in John's room with the Sunrise Pizza with pepperoni on it. We had a delightful time. The guy in the bed next to him with tubes and not talking, we ignored him. Nurse Ratched shows up. What are you doing in here? It's 11:30 at night. With pride, I said, yeah, but I'm Dr. Sartorelli's son. There's no way you can be Dr. Sartorelli is so into the rules of this hospital, you cannot be his son. Out you go. I guess I wasn't honoring his name so well. Carry the name. Yeah, but my dad was a scoundrel, you might say. He was a cheat. That's what I think of at that name. Well, reboot it. Start it over again. Redeem the name for Jesus Christ. Maybe you'll be the first in the line of generations that follows Christ. What a great new start for that name. Carry the name. Secondly, it's an interesting phrase. Paul is taking it from the Ten Commandments, and the promise is, if you honor your father and mother, it'll go well with you as we're about to enter in the land, right? So he's now going to spiritualize it a little bit because he's applying it to everybody. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, which is interesting, isn't it? All the commands you have, I am the Lord your God, no gods before me. They're all this way commands. And then the bridge command is honor the Sabbath day. And then now all of a sudden the behavioral commands start with this one. Wow, that's really important. Honor your father and mother so that it might go well with you and that you might have a long life in the land. I don't think that's math. That if you're a child and you honor your parents, you're going to live to be 93. But I think he is saying it'll go well with you. Your life will be long lived with wellness, with joy. I mean, the best indicator, the best predictor for health as an adult, whether it's a secular study or a religious study, the best indicator for a child's going well in their adulthood, tell me what your home life was like. Are you successful today? You got a job? You're not addicted to things? How was your home life? Carry the name. Have it go well with you. And then the third one, just because Moses was not, when he was giving the commandments in the wilderness, he was not talking necessarily to nine-year-olds. He was talking to adults. And adults, as they were hearing the Ten Commandments, heard also, honor your father and your mother. That applies to us, adults. And it applies to our aging parents. Care for them. Do whatever you can in their elderly years, even if it means finances. Yeah, and that's some of us in here, isn't it? You know Grimm fairy tales, Hansel and Gretel, Rumpelstiltskin? I want to read you some. There once was a very old man whose eyes had become dim, his ears dull of hearing, his knees trembled, and when he sat at table, he could hardly hold the spoon and spilt the broth upon the tablecloth or let it run out of his mouth. His son and his son's wife were disgusted at this, so the old grandfather at last had to sit in the corner behind the stove, and they gave him his food in an earthenware bowl, and not even enough of it. And he used to look towards the table with his eyes full of tears. Once, too, his trembling hands could not hold the bowl, and it fell to the ground and it broke. The young wife scolded him, but he said nothing, he only sighed. Then they bought him a wooden bowl for a few half pence out of which he had to eat. They were once sitting thus when the little grandson, 4 years old, began to gather together some bits of wood upon the ground. "What are you doing there?" asked the father. He said, "I'm making a little trough for you and mother to eat out of when I'm big." The man and his wife looked at each other for a while and presently began to cry. Then they took the old grandfather back to the table and henceforth always let him eat with them. And likewise, they said nothing, even if he did spill a little of anything. Honor your father and your mother, even when they're old, especially when they're old. Okay, that's too convicting. Let's go to the next one. All right, I'm clicking and it ain't happening. There it goes. Parents, encourage. Don't exacerbate your kids. Fathers, parents, I'm saying this is parents, because he just said obey or honor your father and mother. Parents, do not exasperate your children, but bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Exasperate, I love that word. Don't exasperate your kids. When Sarah was little, I used to pretend I forgot her name. She'd get so mad. We'd be sitting at the table and say, "So, Gretchen, what do you think?" "My name's not Gretchen!" Or I'd say, "Remind me what your name is." Don't exasperate. That word, exasperate means to frustrate, to annoy to no end, to make angry because of your frustration. So I thought, as I was reading a number of commentaries, they all just gave their own suggestions on what does it mean to exasperate. So I thought, well, what the heck? I'll just give my own suggestions. I got four of them. Encourage, don't exasperate your children by giving your kids four things. It could be 404, but we don't have time. Time. In this busy, technology-driven, work-driven, always traveling era. How much time do you spend with your kids? You know, there's the old 7-7-7 rule. Have you heard that? First 7 years of your kid's life, you play with them. The second 7 years of their life, you teach them. The third 7 years of their life, you advise them. And if you skip any of the sessions, you've lost your right for the next one. So if you don't spend the first 7 years of your life playing with your kids, and now all of a sudden you want to teach them, they ain't listening. Where were you when I needed someone to fix my bike? Or play ball in the backyard? How much time are you giving to your kids? And time nowadays is attention too, right? I can give my kid time and be doing this the whole time, right? I still remember before there were phones, these kind of phones. I get home from work. Sue and I are probably talking about church or ministry or whatever. And so we're there in the kitchen, and Sue's probably preparing dinner, and we're just talking. And little Sarah is in the living room, family room, and she's singing away. She was always singing. And we weren't paying attention at first to the lyrics of the song that she was making up. She was sitting on this beautiful new white couch that we had. And then all of a sudden it dawned on us what she is saying to her parents who are talking with each other and not paying attention to her. She's singing, she has her sippy cup on the couch, and she's singing, "I'm spilling grape juice on the couch. I'm spilling grape juice on the couch." And before we knew it, our couch was filled with grape juice. Kids don't need your stuff or your gifts. They need your time. Prolific theologian wrote more books. You've read some of them. Toward the end of his life, a colleague of mine went to one of his lectures and said, "Professor, how are you so prolific?" "I sacrificed my family," he said. He's gone now. He's in heaven. Before he left for heaven, his wife ended up divorcing him, and his three children, I understand, are really not walking with Jesus. Encourage, don't exasperate your children by giving your kids time, by giving your kids consistency. "Dad, you said A, but you keep doing B." That wasn't wrong yesterday. Why is it wrong today? I still remember Sarah sitting in the back seat and I'm driving somewhere. Obeying the law was a pretty important instruction we gave at our home. I'm driving somewhere and Sarah, little Sarah's in the back seat looking over my shoulder as I'm driving, and she says, "Hey, Dad, what's the speed limit?" Oh, crap, I'm busted again. I remember as a boy, because my dad was so big on telling the truth. And I do remember we were in Rome one time. I must have been 8 or 9 years old. And we were near somewhere, one of the beautiful scenes of Rome, and we couldn't find a parking space. So there was a space that clearly in Italian said, "You may not park here." My dad parked there. Great. Got out of the car. We went to go see whatever we wanted to see. Probably had lunch, whatever. Dad and his little boy. When we get back to the car, the Italian policeman's writing him a ticket. Still remember this. This is probably almost 60 years ago. And so my dad feigned that he couldn't read Italian. And so he starts speaking English to the policeman, saying, "Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know what that said." And so, and the guy felt sorry for these two dumb Americans that didn't know any Italian. And he ripped up the ticket and off we went. Ah. Consistency. Kids, living for Jesus is really important, and church is a really important part of that. Now, I know next week we can't go, we got soccer next Sunday, and the week after that, we've got choir practice. Oh, and the week after that, we've got this. And now, society doesn't help. And I don't want to be Joe, throw the guilt on everybody, especially you're here. Consistency. Give your kids consistency. Let's talk a little bit about faith and commitment to Christ. Encourage, don't exasperate your children by giving your kids the real thing spiritually. Did you or are you giving your kids Christianity and its rules and its traditions and all of the nice external conformities of life that Christianity, in a sense, calls for? Are you giving them that? Or are you giving them the real thing? Are you giving them Jesus? It's a cliche, and I know it, but we talk about a personal relationship with Christ, and I know it's a cliche, but there's something to that cliche. It's more than just external obedience of something. There's a dynamic of a relationship. Talk about exasperating your kids. Ask your child to live the Christian life, but do not impart the real thing to them. Man, talk about frustration. They can't do it. Nobody can. The Christian life is not hard. It's impossible without Christ. And how often have we given our kids the veneer of Christianity and not the real thing? The church will help, but we got to do it as parents. Right before I left for India, I did something really dumb. I got the COVID vaccine and I got the flu immunization. Like 2 days before I left. What are we thinking? So I'm sick as a dog part of the trip. I asked the lady who's given me the shot. First, she gives the COVID shot. I said, what's in that? Nobody knows. Oh, not comforting. Now comes the flu immunization. What's in that? And she says, there's an itty bitty little bit of the virus so that you don't get the full blown virus. Okay, I knew that. I got that. Are we immunizing our children from Christ, giving them just a wee little bit so that they don't get the full-blown experience? And then we wonder why they don't live the Christian life. Okay. That's too convicting to go to the fourth. Grace. Encourage, don't exasperate your kids. Give them grace. What's the tone of your home? Is the tone of your home law or grace? Is the tone of your home a high bar of excellence and quality, or is it an impossible bar of perfection that I can never hit? Girl I knew in college. She's a hard student. She did well, but she never could please her dad. We worked together in the mailroom at Kent State, and I remember she was so excited because she got great grades, and she couldn't wait to tell her dad that she made the dean's list. Finally, maybe he would be pleased with her. She came back the next day, crestfallen. I said, did you tell your dad you made the dean's list? She said, yes. What did he say? All he could say was with a snark, Dean who? Parents, as we present Christ or represent Christ, as we try to impart the gospel, are we imparting law or grace? Speak to your kids from the heart. We're all miserable sinners, aren't we? And if I project anything other than that, there's no grace. All right, we're done. Let me end with this. Don't forget God is our Father. Parents, we know every freckle, every birthmark, every scar on our kids. We can identify our babies crying in a busy nursery from here, right? We remember that A minus they worked really hard to get. We remember that they played a major role in Meet Me in St. Louis in the drama at school. We remember that they broke their wrist playing volleyball. That's how God knows us, and much, much, much. Psalm 103, God knows our frame and he remembers that we are dust, and yet he still loves us beyond all measure. All of us in our total, total, total imperfections as parents, as children. He's the perfect parent. I end with that picture, which is Rembrandt's Return of the Prodigal Son. That's the Father, and that's our Father who loves us and just says, come on home, please. Come on home. I know you blew it as a parent. I know you blew it as a son. Just come on home. I love you, and my grace is sufficient for you. I'm praying. Let's pray together. Father, I pray that your words would be really clear in our hearts and minds today as we contemplate your calling for us as parents and as children in whatever episode and chapter of lives that we are in. Lord, I pray that your words and instructions would be memorable to us. If I said anything that's helpful, help us remember that. If I said anything silly, help us forget that. And help us remember your word and your calling for us as parents and children to reflect your grace and your love as a father. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.